There is a graduation barbecue at our house this evening. I think we've had that activity over at least the last 7 years. Michelle and I weren't quite sure at what point it started. But graduation in a person's life in various ways is a milestone. Some of it's schooling, some of it's trade or craft. There's different ways in which each of us develops our skills. It took me 9 years to graduate from the college before I got my four-year degree. I'm a little slow on the uptake sometimes. I didn't even consider going to college as I did it to be for a job. My third attempt at college was Ambassador College, which was the church's college, and the majority of all the classes I took were theology. I did not expect theology would be my profession. So I actually looked at college as what I wanted to do, and then after college I would go and learn a trade, and the trade would be my profession, and then my profession would pay for what it was I wanted to do. And I've told that story a little bit at times. I'll just be very brief. First time I went to college, I didn't really understand fully what the rules were, like you're supposed to go to class and study. So I was flunking. I thought, well, what do they expect, you know? So I was flunking. I thought, well, that's not going to look good in the long run. So I withdrew from all my classes so I'd have a WD on my scholastic record instead of a D or an F, and I walked away. And so I just cleared out and abandoned my first attempt, went into the Army. Army seemed to change my behavior and attitude a little bit. So the second time, I went back to the very same college and started again, and all of a sudden, now I'm an A student. And an A student, with the exception maybe of chemistry, I guarantee the one thing in this life I never would have ever been able to be is a chemist. I took chemistry before we had calculators. I know some of you can't understand that there were never calculators. There were slide rules. There was a stick, and you moved this stick, and you did all your calculations on a stick. And it took a long time, especially if you weren't very good at it. So I struggled in chemistry, and it kept my grades down. But I had straight A's, and then I had chemistry. But it was enough. I was still an A student on the average. So I finished college freshman year the second time. And I said, all right, I went into college once and I flunked, and then I went back to the same college and I got an A, basically. And I lost interest because I said, all right, I'm no happier now than I was the first time. And I wasn't. I worked hard and I got what I wanted, I still wasn't happy. So I go, forget school, I don't want school, let me go do something else. So I went and did something else for a while, worked in construction and ran around in the desert and had a motorcycle and went off by myself in the mountains and ended up, as God was calling me, I said, okay, let's try again. So I went to college the third time as a freshman at Ambassador College, back then the college of the church. I liked it so much that I stayed all 4 years, even though I had credit I could have transferred. I didn't want to go away. Let me stay here as long as I can. Well, they closed Big Sandy on me when I was a junior, and they closed Pasadena on me when I was a senior, so you couldn't stay any longer. There was nowhere left to stay. But I finally graduated at the age of 28. Somebody told me recently they dropped out of college because of funding, finance, they didn't have the money, and I got to back calculating. They were probably 21 or 2 years old when they dropped out of college because they couldn't afford it. I didn't graduate until I was 28. I was 24 when I started my third time. So fact is, there's options sometimes if a person chooses based on what you're wanting to do. And since my profession became college and not a trade, honestly, it would have helped me if I'd have had a trade. I actually had a job where I had been hired on in home construction after graduating from college, because what I wanted to do is build custom homes, learn how, run a business, make money. Then go do what I wanted to do, was build an adventure sports resort, because I wanted to live a life of adventure. And that was my goal and dream in this life, and that's the way I thought I would get there. Well, because my background is in college, they change the, they designate the progression of your accomplishment by the grade you're in. And it's freshman, sophomore, junior, senior. I never got to be a trade, so I don't have the equivalent terms for the accomplishment on that side. Freshman means beginner. You're a novice, it means fresh. Sophomore means you got a serious attitude problem, is what it means. Sophomoric is the word. There is no junior amoric, and there's no senior amoric. It's only sophomoric or sophomore amoric, whatever it is. Sophomore means to become wise. Something happens after your freshman year, you're a beginner or freshman, all of a sudden the sophomores come rolling in and they're the world. You know, they're the ones. And there's something about that. I don't know what that is. By the time you get to be a junior, junior means young, younger. And senior means old or older. Something happens if you just stick in there long enough that by the time you're a junior, you're humbled enough into a continuance. But by the time you're a senior, you're supposed to be mature, because that's the point. Older in the meaning of mature. And you got to get past being fresh and past being sophomoric, past being young, to be mature. Now, if you're going to go through that process, and I would say, okay, then what did I learn in college? What did college give me as I matured in the system as they describe it? I would have to say, for me, I learned that my life needed to be a life of service. That's the lesson. Now, I studied theology, and I learned about the Bible, and I did other things, and we rode our bicycles coast to coast. They're having the reunion in Missoula in July of this year of our 4,300-mile coast-to-coast ride. I looked in the mirror the other day, and I thought, yeah, it looks about the same. Looks about... I have a jersey. I saved my jersey. The waist on it is this big, I think. It's unbelievable. I rode 4,300 miles twice because I was a rover. And we ran up and down the line doing sprints, fixing the bikes, and then bringing everybody back to the pack. We rode across the United States, I figure, twice. But boy, I tell you what, it was fun. We had a great time. Those were the days. But what did I learn? Well, you know, it wasn't that I learned how to ride a bike. And it wasn't that I learned to get A's, because part of that was beating the system. I learned that I could sit up at night and I could memorize long strings of lists and answers to pass the test. And I just wouldn't go to bed the night before a major test. I would memorize, make up the story, you know, in the first place, in the second place, in the third place, the logic that was used for rhetoric. And I could literally memorize the story in all the terms. I'd pass the test, get my A, and I'd go on. Now, most of it dissipated rather quickly, but that wasn't the point. The point was you have to understand the system, and you have to beat it so that you get out the door so that you can go do what you really want to do anyway. Now, I know maybe that's not an ideal philosophy of life, but it is part of the philosophy of the reality of life. People complain about, well, it's just a system, it's just a bunch of politics, or it's just a bunch of administration, or it's just a bunch of rules. It is, sometimes. And you have to live within it. And if the speed limit is 25, it is 25, it is not 40. And if the sign is a stop, it is a stop, it is not a yield. You can run up against it all you want, and it isn't going to go away because you're not pleased. So at some point in time in this life, you figure out what makes this life work. Before God, you do what he says right in spirit and truth. That's a high standard, okay? But within the physical system, there's a way that this has to work. And you have to have the means to open the door so that you have the opportunity then to do what you really value the most. You can close that door real fast, real quick. Being a graduate is supposed to imply that you have come to a level of maturity in the process of what you have accomplished, and that there should be then, if we're going to now go to before God, there should be some way in which you can better serve. Not some way in which you can more be in charge, not some way in which you can more have your way, No, there should be some way in which you can better serve. I learned about the lesson of going to college and having to make that choice to be a servant, and I had the opportunity to make a choice on that basis very quickly after I graduated as a senior. I have tried, philosophically, when I have come up against a decision in my life, and there's a why. I won't call it a crossroads because it's more of a why. If this part of the why is, this is what I really want to do, and this part of the why is, this is what really is most important, what college taught me is to do what is the most important, not what you want the most. That's the decision, because that's being a servant. Doing what you want the most isn't necessarily wrong, but that isn't necessarily the wisest choice. Did Christ do what he really wanted to do the most, or did he do what was really most important? He says, God, you know, help me. If there's any way other than this, let's do it. Father said, basically, essentially, no, this is what we need to do. Christ said, your will be done. So maturity and skill sets ought to bring us to a place that we learn how to make that decision. What is the most important thing that we need to do? The most important thing we need to do might be to maintain and build our marriage. It might be to dedicate and raise our children. It might be to sacrifice and let the next generation have the benefit of increase. Might be a save your money now, not so you can spend it on yourself, but so that you can actually pass it on to someone who needs it for their opportunity in their day. So those are all different things. But after graduating from college, spending the summer up at the OR youth camp up in Minnesota, coming back down, went and interviewed for my job and the profession that I wanted to get into, which was home construction, hired on. A friend of mine was on the same crew. He and I were going to build our resort together, so we're going to make our lives kind of work together to stay together till we got to that point. 2 weeks until the next house started, so I had 2 weeks off. I headed back to Pasadena. This was in Texas. Friends in Pasadena, and I could spend 2 weeks and then return home and or return back to Texas and go to work. I never made it back to Texas. I never went back and took the job and went on with my life according to the plan that I had made. When I got to Pasadena, my car fell apart. Well, it was a 78 TR3. It wasn't exactly in prime shape. I had warped the head on it. You know how much goop you have to pour in an engine when you warp the head and you want to keep going? A bunch. So there were problems, but I made it back to Pasadena, limped in. Now I had to fix the car. Well, I checked back with the man that I had asked to be employed by, and he has houses every so many weeks. He said, come over in about 2 months and we'll start another house. You can start with me then. So I said, fine. I went to the college campus, looked around. There was a job on the moving crew. You know, the first time we took a fire file down the stairwell, it proved to me this is not for me. You know, fire files have like, I don't know if it's plaster of Paris or cement or what, but they have this material in between the two layers that is, you can't burn it. Well, you can't lift it either. And so there weren't elevators in all of the buildings, and so we literally had, when someone had to move one of those, I was going to call in sick, but honorable young man that I was, doing the most important thing, which was show up at work, you know, that was an interesting lesson for a couple of months on what real grunt labor really is. Made me want to use my education more than before. But it was an interesting thing. While I was on the back of the moving truck one day, one of the administrators of the college came by, and he had known me as a student. I'd been student body president, so there was actually some interlap there and activities and things. And so there's just a little bit of association. He stopped and looked at me. He says, what are you doing? Now, there's nothing depreciating about being on a moving crew, but it wasn't his expectation that I would go out of college in the way that I had gone through and that would be where I would would choose to be. And I said, well, we're moving this furniture right here. And we talked a bit. I explained to him what had happened, what my plans were, and where I was going. And he said, why don't you come up to my office and see me? So I came up to his office at some point with a T-shirt and jeans on, you know, real set up for whatever the interview was going to be. And he offered me a job to work for him personally. And now I got all my life and plans and career and activities, and my life's going to be a life of adventure eventually when I got there. And then I could work in Pasadena, be around Mike. I'm still around Mike. God obviously wanted us to be together more than a little. Well, I got thinking about it. I said, all right, here's what I want the most. But I think this might be the most important. And it isn't permanent. You know, I can test it out and see if it works. I chose to stay and work in Pasadena because there was work there to be done that I thought was more important than me just having a big adventure and going on a big hoot for my own life and choices. I stayed, canceled my option on home construction, canceled at some point, actually, the adventure sports lifestyle, trusted God by giving him my service, which is what that was. I didn't do this for a man or a person. I did this for God. Trusted God, all right, I'll put myself into your hands. I will serve you in this way, if that is your will, as much as I understand. And you know what I got out of it? I got a life of adventure. I had a life of adventure. Now, he took his, I don't want to say own sweet time. That might not be very respectful. He took his time before it all played out. But time came when Challenger Camp opened up, and they needed someone who could rock climb. And, you know, when we were training for this lifestyle, we were certified as sailors on the ocean in sailboats, so we could take them out by ourselves, certified scuba diving. We took rock climbing lessons with an instructor. We were doing things in a more formal way and trying to, you know, flight lessons and working toward your pilot's license. We were trying to do things in a way that we could credential so that we could use those things in the future. But opportunity opened up, and there weren't too many ministers who had done any kind of rock climbing. In fact, I think they could only find one. And so I got the pass. Well, that opened up opportunity to do some mountaineering, and the mountaineering opened up opportunity to do some other things, but then the Challenger program opened up, which became climbing, and that dovetailed, so I got to do that, and then all the hikes into the Wind Rivers and the various things that followed, that all opened up the door, and it was something God says, all right, here is my gift now to you. It wasn't a promise, it wasn't guaranteed, it wasn't in the contract. I simply got to the point in my life where that choice was made. I made it. God, in his blessing and mercy, returned it on me in spades. Well, it went beyond that. Paul's talking about they're not going to be over there as tourists in Nigeria. There isn't anybody over there as tourists in Nigeria. Tourists do not go to Nigeria. Tourists go to Kenya. They go to South Africa. They go to France or Paris or England. They do not go to Nigeria. Adventurers go to Nigeria. And when I saw Nigeria come up, I thought that has to be the best place in the world to want to be. Why would I want to go anywhere but Nigeria? And I loved it. I truly have loved it, enjoyed and appreciated it. And that have over time expanded. It expanded into some of the other nations, which you know, and you've heard the sermons, and Paul has a zest, a taste for the same thing, and I'm grateful for it, because I'm about toast, and there has to be somebody picking things up, carrying on. But I remember the first time I made it to Kinshasa, and I'm standing in Kinshasa looking around, I don't believe I'm here, this is amazing. I'm looking for Humphrey Bogart, you know, in and out of the buildings. We were walking down the street, downtown Kinshasa. There was not another white person that we saw anywhere, at least on the ground. Once in a while, somebody would zip by in an armored car or something, maybe, you know, an embassy vehicle or something might go by, but there was nobody on the ground, and it was just delicious. So I said, look, this place is on the Congo River. The Congo River here is called Stanley Pool. I've read the book. I've read the story of the travel, Morton Stanley, and coming down, and he came right through this place right here. I got to stand on the side of that river. And I remember standing on the Congo, looking around, going, I don't believe I'm here. I couldn't believe I'm here. So, you know, God, I wouldn't have made it to the Congo with an adventure sports resort, I don't believe. I wouldn't have made it to many of the things that I got to do. And yet God said, okay, you want a life of adventure? Here, serve me. And again, and he handed that. So I guess we're going to go to school, or we're going to take a trade, or we're going to have a certificate, and we're going to attain a level of proficiency. Then the point is to become mature. And maturity should teach us to, if we're going to live this life in the most important way, then let's take a look when we have a choice to do what we really want and what is really the most important. And hopefully, when you're raising children, when you're married, when you have relationships and you come up to that why, you'll always choose, how can I serve you or you, God, or what he's given me? Because that's the intent of what our maturity is supposed to be. Look at Isaiah 41, in case you were wondering if I was going to use the Bible today. Isaiah 41, I spent a lot of time in Isaiah lately. I never really fully, not that I fully now, but to this degree, I've never understood the book of Isaiah. It's amazing how if you actually look at something and read it, your knowledge expands so clearly. But Isaiah 41, verse 8, shows the relationship that God had with Israel and what his intention for them was. It says, you, Israel, are my servant. That's the point. He chose them to be his servant, as it's also quoted and translated, his slave. In bondage, in a right bondage, in complete submission to God. You, Israel, are my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the descendants of Abraham, my friend. Abraham was the friend of God. That's what the Bible says. You whom I have taken from the ends of the earth, called from its furthest regions, and said to you, you are my servant. I have chosen you, have not cast you away. Fear not. I am with you. Do not be dismayed. I am your God. I will strengthen you. Yes, I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. God says, I will be there. I will protect you. I will guide you. You're called to serve me. That's what our relationship will be. Now, if you go back then to the book of Leviticus, and in this case, Leviticus 25, because Leviticus 25 talks about the Jubilee. The Jubilee is a portrayal of really what we're coming up to on the day of Pentecost, and it's the portrayal of arriving at freedom. Freedom from bondage in this flesh, but not freedom from servitude to God. Obviously, the whole point of dedicating ourselves to God is to serve him. But God reinforces the same concept in the midst of the lessons to the Jubilee and therefore to Pentecost. And in verse 39, it says, if one of your brethren who dwells by you becomes poor and sells himself to you, you shall not compel him to serve as a slave. But as a hired servant and a sojourner, he shall be with you. He's a sojourner. You don't own him. He will not always be there unless he himself chooses. He's just passing through as your hired servant and shall serve you until the year of the Jubilee. And then he shall depart from you, both he and his children with him, and shall return to his own family. He shall return to the possession of his fathers. For they are my servants, whom I brought out of the land of Egypt. They shall not be sold as slaves. Do not take my servants into bondage to you. They serve me. And that was God's point. And he's portraying that relationship. He repeats it in verse 55. For the children of Israel are servants to me. They are my servants, whom I brought out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. He delivered them from bondage in Egypt in order to serve him. Going over to Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28 are the blessings and the curses as it's portrayed. Verse number 11, of chapter 26 says, I will set my tabernacle among you. My soul shall not abhor you. I will walk among you and be your God, and you shall be my people. I am the Lord your God, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt, that you should not be their slaves. I have broken the bands of your yoke and made you walk upright, not so that you could just go and do whatever you please, so that you would be free now to totally dedicate yourself to and serve me. That's the point. That's how we're supposed to live our life. That ought to be what we learn as we come to maturity by developing skills and ways in which we can assist others around us. So let me put that a little bit then into relationship with our job searches and the professions that we maintain, or even with doing the job as we do them. My brother trained to be an attorney, and he wanted to be a trial lawyer. And by that, like in the movies, you know, you argue before the jury and you nail the expert witness, and then you get your client free and you win the case and you're the hero. That's kind of the nutshell, I would say. But you know, when he got out of college for wanting to be an attorney, they didn't have any opening trial lawyer jobs for beginners. Can you imagine that? Yeah, I'd like to be, I'll represent you in the trial. I'm going to give you a 25% discount. This is my first case. Right? I don't think so. Is that how it works? So what he did, and he told me one time, he took the jobs that nobody else really wanted. You know, doing the legal paperwork and forms, it was kind of the low end of the food chain of the lawyer system, the grunt work, and that's where he started, that's where he began. He did what the rest of some, at least those who had options, did not want to do, and he did it well. And in time, you know what he became? He became a trial lawyer. He drives a Ferrari, and he has a boat, a yacht, down in the launch, down in the water. And you know what? We don't have to measure success by those things. That's what he measured his success by, because that's what he chose. That's his decision. But the point was, he started out doing what nobody else really wanted to do unless they had to. And he did it well, and it opened the door. So maturity ought to be recognizing that you serve, find the thing that nobody wants to do, and then you do it. And you do it well. Do it consistently and do it well. And believe me, the doors will open to you. Do it with a smile. You will have opportunity to serve. That's basically what businesses try to do. They try to find a niche, something that somebody isn't doing or doing as well, something that's a special need or request, and they can move in there and then offer that, and that's how they become successful. But we have a society that tries to teach us, well, what you really need to do is win the lotto. You know, that's like, we're going to do this, we're going to hit the home run. If you could just get one time, get this one big killing, get this one big opportunity, then you're going to have it made. That is not how life works. One person wins the lotto. Everybody else's money goes down the toilet. No, it does not. Everyone else's money goes to that one person who wins the lotto, except what goes to waste and pays for the bureaucracy and the various things. Life doesn't work by hitting home runs. There are people who hit them. They're very, very few, and they're publicized, but it's not what everybody gets to do. It's not the opportunity. Do the thing that nobody wants. Take the lowest seat at the table, as it would say in Scripture. Be the servant that is willing to serve in any capacity. And believe me, you will rise, because your need is going to be recognized. There's always a need for those people who are willing to serve. Philippians chapter 2. The example of Jesus Christ. Verse number 5, let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God, did not consider robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, taking the form of a servant and coming in the likeness of men. You really think that would be the prime thing to do? Hi, how would you like to go down and be a person and get murdered? Are there any other choices out there? He did it. And he didn't go through his life grinding his teeth. I'm going to have to take a beating. I'm going to have to die for these people, these miserable people that don't even appreciate me. That's not what he did. He willingly sacrificed himself. It would have been a joy to have been in his presence. Being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself, became obedient to the point of death, even the death of the cross. Therefore, God also has highly exalted him and given him the name which is above every name, that at that name of Jesus every knee should bow, of those in heaven, those on earth, those under the earth, that every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. So we need to be willing servants. We need to serve with a smile, quite honestly, not gritting our teeth, happily serving. Look at Isaiah 53. This is prophecy of Jesus Christ. Again, as I work through Isaiah back and forth, and this is one of the passages that we're more familiar with in its midst, but it's a prophecy, again, about Christ, the suffering servant. Verse 1, who has believed our report, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? He will grow up before him as a tender plant, as a root out of dry ground. He has no form or comeliness. When we see him, there is no beauty that we should desire him. He didn't even get to be a knockout in the flesh. Apparently, he was kind of average in his appearance. Not average in his personality or his influence, obviously. Despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief, and we hid, as it were, our faces from him. He was despised, and we did not esteem him. Surely he has borne our griefs, carried our sorrows, yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God, afflicted, but he was wounded for our transgressions, and he was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him. By his stripes we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned every one to his own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. Notice verse 7. He was oppressed, he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He was led as a lamb to the slaughter, and a sheep before its shears is silent. So he opened not his mouth. He wasn't complaining. He wasn't protesting. He wasn't justifying. He wasn't arguing back. He actually sacrificed him all to the death, all the way to the death of the cross without complaint. Well, that's a good high standard. When Megan was a little girl, she was in love with horses. Any of you that remember our kids when they were here and knew Megan that way know that. Didn't matter which kind of horse, didn't matter if a plug or not a plug, she loved the horse. There was a house and a barn near us when we first moved in. It's gone now. The fire company actually used either the house or the barn as a test. They lit it on fire and put it out. But it's all gone now. Then it's just an open field. But the house there had the barn. The barn had horses. They had some stables. And some of the horses were the people who lived there. And I'm not sure, maybe there was some boarded or not. But there was one horse. So I remember going over there because Megan was like drawn to horses, you know. You just had to go see the horse, you know. So we got over there. And here's this one horse. Sway back, old, couldn't even chew its regular feed. They had to feed it some kind of a mash almost. They had some kind of feed where the horse could even chew it. Megan wanted that one. Megan, I don't think that's going to work. This is going to be nothing but trouble here and misery, and we're going to have to turn around and pay for this thing when he collapses, and then we're stuck. She didn't care. So in some course of time, Michelle figured out, well, you know what? We'll just have Megan go to work over there for free. And you know where the bottom of the food chain is on the horse business? Hauling manure, cleaning the stables, sweeping out the stalls. So Michelle went over and spent time with her, made sure the arrangement and the environment and the people and the relationships were proper. I don't remember what all. Michelle handled it. But here's Megan, you know, I get to haul manure. I am I've arrived, you know. I've arrived at my station. So she ate wheelbarrows of just straw and dirt manure up on a big pile on the hill, and she was in horse heaven. It wasn't hog heaven. There was no hogs there. But that's what she wanted to do. She was at the very bottom of the food chain, and that was her option. You know, over time, Megan had a couple of horses of her own, actually, in her own stall with her own shed where she could train and learn and share. And then she started giving lessons to little girls in the neighborhood, and she had them come and brush and clean up, not just get the horse ready and have them get on their back, actually work with the horse. And most of those girls, I think, went out and got horses. Someday their family got them for them as well. But Megan just had to go in there. All right, you want to do something? Get a shovel and a rake. Get to work. You've arrived. You're doing what you wanted. You're a servant. Life's great if you want to start at the top and you want to say, well, I deserve better than this. Well, we don't deserve much of anything, honestly. I think Christ, you could say, deserved better than what he got, but what he did for us. And then he said, do as I do. What I have done to you, do to each other. The foot washing was the specific example. But if your life is based on what is the most important thing that I must do when it comes time to make a choice, then you're going to do the right thing. Doesn't mean that what you want differently is wrong, and you don't always not get to do what you wanted differently. I did get to do things that I wanted personally to do, but I only did them when they were not in conflict with something that was more important. If I ever had to make that choice, honestly, what college taught me, Bassiter College back then, was to try to do the thing that makes you the servant. That's most important. That's what God had given me in various ways. Mark 9 and verse 33. It's in the middle of a story of the disciples kind of disputing with each other, but this is sufficient. It says he came to Capernaum. When he was in the house, he asked them, what was it you disputed about among yourselves on the road? And they kept silent because on the road they had disputed among themselves who'd be the greatest, who'd have the best job, where they'd be able to be recognized for their authority and their skills. He sat down, called the 12, and he said, if anyone desires to be first, he shall be last of all and servant of all. And then he took a little child, set him in the midst of them, and when he had taken him in his arms, he said to them, whoever receives one of these little children in my name receives me. Whoever receives me receives not me, but him who sent me. Child has to be basically taken care of, protected, provided for, directed, tolerated, loved. But a child's not taking care of himself, generally speaking. That's just not what it's all about. It's about us being servants. Having a child is about being a servant, not a master. That's just not how the sacrifice plays. Chapter 10, verse number 35, you have now, again, another story here. James and John, sons of Zebedee, came to Jesus Christ saying, teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. Boy, that's great, like a genie in a bottle, right? Just rub the back of the bottle and you get all your wishes. That's not what this is. He said, what do you want me to do for you? And they said, grant us that we may sit one on your right hand, the other on your left in your glory. Well, that's not the right attitude. That's not about service. That's not about doing the most important thing. Christ said, I can't do that for you. But here's what you need to understand. Go to verse 42. Jesus called them to himself, and he said to them, the disciples, you know that those who are considered rulers over the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. Yet it shall not be so among you, but whoever desires to become great among you shall be your servant. Whoever of you desires to be first shall be slave of all. Even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, to give his life a ransom for many. So the scripture is pretty clear, but how do we arrive at the point where we learn that that's what God wants for us to do? Well, we have to mature. So hopefully in the course of time, we're going to have a graduation. And hopefully, in the course of time, we'll develop certain skill sets that we can use for the benefit of those around us. And actually, the side benefit then of our skills is the reward. But the reward will follow. And obviously, there's different levels of that based on the kind of choices we make and God's blessing. Graduation is not about what you're going to get. It's about what you're now able to give. It's a totally different focus. Take the least seat at the table and sit well with a smile on your face and be productive. We had a class dance when I was a freshman at college. I forget, South Pacific or something. And I was older. I'd been in the military. I had had rank and leadership. I kind of thought, well, you know, they'll probably want to use me in some way to be a leader. They didn't. So I, okay, all right, so that's this year, you know. I said, well, how can I help? Well, we need some help with decorations, all right? What do you need done? Well, we need you to decorate that door. Really? Thank you very much. So I said, all right, we're going to decorate that door. This was the entrance door to the entire dance and activity. There were four or five of the young ladies that didn't have anything to do, and we kind of got together, and I said, do you want to do this together? I said, yeah, let's do this together. So what we did, we built an absolute grass hut out of canes from the big sandy creek right off the edge of the property, and all I don't know what it is, it's not thatch, but the tops to them you could make like thatch. And we spent a lot of time, we tied it all together, spring, and we made it into two pieces so you could stick one on each side of the door, and you walked into a hut, and you walked out of a hut on the other side, and you walked into the South Pacific. I mean, it was amazing. And it was just a decoration on a door. Next year, I was class president. If he can do doors, imagine what he maybe could do, you know, with an activity, you know. It was a door. But there were people that wanted to serve that had no place to help. We took the door. We gave them the best door that we could ever imagine. And you know what? It actually got noticed. And you didn't have to raise your hand and say, I did that. And you didn't have to apply the next time for the job. Somebody came to you and said, would you help us? That's just the way it is. You didn't have to ask for anything. You just had to do something in service and do it well and smile. Make it like you enjoyed it. In fact, do enjoy it. That's the point. Not to fake it. The point is to actually truly do enjoy being a servant. Ecclesiastes 11. There's a number of scriptures. I always say, yeah, I really like this one. Well, that's because there's a lot of scriptures that I really do like. They send an amazing message, but Ecclesiastes 11, verse 1, cast your bread on the waters, for you will find it after many days. Give a serving to seven, also to eight. You do not know what evil will be on the earth. Do something, build something, help someone, produce, contribute. It'll come back. You don't know how it'll come back. Let God be the judge. If the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves on the earth. If a tree falls to the south or the north, a place where the tree falls, there it'll be. You're not going to change the way things are going to play out around you. They're going to happen. Accidents will happen. Benefits will happen. It's going to happen with or without you. He who observes the wind will not sow. He who regards the clouds will not reap. If you're looking at the trouble and the risk, then you'll do nothing. Do not spend your focus on looking at the possibilities of failure. You do not know what is the way of the wind or how the bones grow in the womb of her who is with child, so you do not know the works of God who makes all things. In the morning, sow your seed. In the evening, do not withhold your hand, for you do not know which will prosper, either this or that. Just start serving. Let God bring the increase of your efforts, and again, in a genuine, happy way. Cast your bread on the waters. Feed the fish. Maybe you'll catch the fish you fed. Maybe your neighbor will catch the fish you fed. Maybe your neighbor will catch the fish and be prospered and then give you a gift you have no idea. Just do something. Not so that you'll have something back, but in order to genuinely serve. That's the message. We have a neighbor fairly close to our house who's a Washington State Patrol. I just walked by the back of the car last night, just walking around the neighborhood a little bit before the Sabbath started. And on the bottom of the license plate, it says, "Service with Humility." I never really thought about policemen in the context of service with humility. So that's part of the message that they want the troopers to understand, that they are servants. Now, they have to do things with bad people, but they're servants. And they want them to serve with humility. You know, a humble person doesn't actually know that they're humble. If you know you're humble, you are not humble. That's the point. If you think you're humble, you're not. But we're supposed to be humble before God. You know what that means? That means when you serve, you don't think you're doing anything special. You don't consider it, oh, I'm going to serve you today. No, you just do what you would normally do. You walk by, there's a piece of paper on the ground, you pick it up, you're not thinking, I'm going to be a servant, I'm going to pick up this piece of paper. No, you pick it up because that would be the normal thing to do. You would expect that would be reasonable, and you would not expect anyone to even notice that you had done it. It's just the reasonable thing. That's what service would be in its right form. So Romans 12, verse number 1, describes that a little bit. It says, "I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service." It is what God would expect. It's why we are supposed to develop and learn and grow, and it is our graduation and our maturity before God that should be then evident in place. "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." God just says, you know what? A living sacrifice, that's just what I would expect you to be. You don't walk around and say, yeah, I'm a living sacrifice. Yeah, I'm going to serve you. Yeah, I'm going to really put up with you today. That's not what that is. When you have served someone, when you have humbled yourself, you don't even notice that you have done so. And you're not expecting that someone else's notice either, or give you the credit, or it's nice to be thanked and appreciated. That is, we're grateful for that. So I don't want to depreciate the value of giving each other our thanks and appreciation. But my point is, you don't do it in order to be thanked. You don't give in order to get. You give because it's your genuine, reasonable sacrifice that God has called us to. You know, tied to this, because Romans 12 goes on talking about the gifts that each of us have and the different kinds of gifts that we have. And I'm not going to actually read that part of it. But I'll just say this, trying to determine if you have a spiritual gift is like trying to determine if you have humility. If you figure out you have it, you probably don't. If you do figure out if you have it, and you do have it, you probably just tainted it. Probably just made it where you can't hardly use it anyway. We shouldn't be looking around to see what it is that we have that is so great. Just use what you have well. That's called bearing fruit, bearing much fruit. You don't need to label it or identify it or have some kind of an assessment to prove it so that you can claim to someone else that this is what it is. That's not the way Scripture plays. God gave us the power to choose. You cannot choose to have a gift. You can receive it, but you can't choose to have a gift, or it's not a gift. You can choose to be of service. You can choose to submit yourselves, ourselves, one to another in that way. And you know what? Generally speaking, when you're doing something that nobody else really wants to do anyway, like go pick up that piece of paper or whatever it would be times 1,000, okay? You don't need permission to do it either. You do not need permission to do those things which are the least that nobody wants to do anyway. They're happy that you did it because it saved them from having to consider it possibly themselves. So how do you know when you're graduating from something if you have become mature? Well, Luke 6, Luke 6, verse 43. A good tree does not bear bad fruit, nor does a bad tree bear good fruit. For every tree is known by its own fruit. Men do not gather figs from thorns, nor do they gather grapes from a bramble bush. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good. An evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart brings forth evil. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So that's a specific application. There's other ones that say, you know what? You'll be known by your fruits. Honest answer is, you might not know personally if you're mature or not. Because if you think you're mature, then you probably aren't. But we still must be mature. And we are mature in the sense that we take and focus on and give ourselves over to those things which are the most important when it comes time to make a choice. What do I really want? What's really most important? I could just say it this way. If you can see that assessment in your life and you choose what is most important and you don't begrudge it, you're willing and happy to do so, then I think that's probably where maturity is at least being pointed and headed. That we learn to put others first and to be a servant, and that we learn to do these things.